right next to me, my little iPad here is just flowing through the carousel of all the really cool features on our website that you can check out. Now, we're talking to MK Davis, so you can go in there and on the carousel, very first, you'll see MK and you can click on it and you're going to see the skulls that he's talking about. You're going to also see a big footprint from Mount St. Helens that's pretty interesting. The Art Bell Vault in there. It's talking about calling in for entries for our Halloween gallery and preparing for Ghost to Ghost George Norrie will have on Friday. And also some, you know, like a dog man caught on film. Check it out. We have a great website, coasttocoastam.com. It's Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here along with MK Davis. He is talking about photos he's found himself and some that he takes himself too. In fact, he's provided me some good ones on ConnieWillis.com. You can always go to my site as well. And I hope you do for some future things. That's where you can find me. Just go there, sign up. We'll go from there. Lots of cool stuff I'll tell you about, show you. ConnieWillis.com. Let's get back to the pictures that MK's got on our website. Really cool. Be sure to check them out. You'll see what he's talking about. So, MK, we got that we're doing the peoplings of America. So, take it away. It's all yours.
All right. Well, this is where it gets kind of strange, and it's strange enough with a giant skull, you know.
Yes.
But even stranger still is that there are recognizable traits about this skull that give a person a clue about where it came from. It's astounding. If you look at the picture I got on the website there, it should say Lovelock Cave Skull. It's kind of shows the front teeth and the jaw, a good frontal picture of the jaw. You'll see that the bottom jaw, the mandible, is turned up on the chin, is upturned. And they call that a rocker jaw. Anthropologists do. There's only one group of people that have that, a rocker jaw, and that's Polynesians. What is a giant Polynesian person with an elongated skull, double rows of teeth, and his rocker jaw doing in northern Nevada, way, way, way back in time? It's that you have to ask those questions, you know, and that has to do with the peopling, who was first, you know, these people, or whatever it is. And I say that because it's strange enough that you have to entertain that possibility that it's not us. We're living up in those mountains of the Jarbidge, where Jarbidge Wilderness is now, and the Ruby Mountains, where they are now. And they came down on the Paiutes for some unknown reason with a cannibalistic bent. So were they hungry? Were they starving? Was it something that drove them out? Where did they come from? How did they get up in those mountains? How did they get so big? And those are all unanswered questions, but the questions all stopped when the museum said, we never had this skull.
Yeah. What's that about?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I know that over and over and over again, there seems to be obstacles that are deliberately placed in the way when you ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I'll give an example. The Kennewick Man, that's a complete skeleton or nearly complete skeleton found in the Columbia River near Kennewick, Washington. And this thing was so different. Native Americans wanted to rebury it under the Repatriation Act, and the scientists weren't having it. And so they kind of overstepped their authority and had DNA tests run on it. And it came out to be non-Aboriginal. It was so old. It's probably one of the oldest skeletons ever found in North America. And they do not know. They do not know the answers, but they did not want it reburied, and they did not want questions asked. So what they did was they put this thing in under lock and key. Nobody can examine it. Nobody can come and look at it. And then they send trucks full of concrete and riprap up to where it was found in the Columbia River, and they covered over everything where you cannot find another skeleton or any other parts. It's just riprap and concrete over the riprap.
Why? I mean, why? I would think even they, whoever this is, would want to know more. Or is it because they already know what it is, so they're going to cover it up so you won't know?
That's a good question, see. I know that, but that got you to thinking, didn't it, Connie?
Yeah, it's like it drives me crazy.
A question or two.
As
any normal thinking person that has concern for any of those things, history, the truth, a true history.
This will tell us who we are. We don't know who we are.
Well, this individual, they had an expert, you know, that's an expert on rebuilding the flesh on a skull.
Yeah, those are cool.
Trying to, you know, rebuild flesh on. They printed the skull out in 3D, I think, and they rebuilt it. And it looked very much like the actor who plays Captain Picard in the Star Trek. what's his name? I've forgotten his name. John Stewart?
Something
Stewart.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the bones of the skeleton was embedded an arrowhead shot in the back. He was shot in the back. That tells you even, you know, you have to ask other questions. You know, here was one of the oldest skeletons ever found. It was non-Aboriginal, and then an Aboriginal shot him.
It was a homicide.
How old are the Aboriginals? You know, how old are they really? You have these, you know, the Smithsonian Institution, you know, used to argue the guy there that was running it named Herlishka. And he would try to ruin the career of anyone who thought they had evidence that mankind was here beyond 4,000 to 6,000 years. So he kept that suppressed because he threw the weight of the whole Smithsonian behind him. But there was a gentleman named George McJunkin in New Mexico. He was an ex-slave. After the Civil War, he went out west. And he came upon, in an arroyo, he came upon these bones of this extinct bison with these huge horns. You know, nothing like that exists now. And embedded in those, the bones were arrowheads. And he thought this has got to be something important. So he began a little campaign to try to get a university interested in it. And eventually it made its way to the University of Colorado. And the fellow that was running the science department there was willing to take Herlishka on and forced Herlishka to come off of that 4,000 to 6,000 years. And so it became I think the Clovis, maybe. No, it wasn't the Clovis. Maybe the Folsom. But it's slowly, over time, the age of the peopling of the Americas has been pushed back by one find after another that was not able to be suppressed. Eventually, the Smithsonian had to relinquish, they acquiesced because a mastodon tusk was found in a bog in Florida, and on that tusk was a scene of people killing the mastodon, carved into it.
Mm.
And when that thing was presented to the Smithsonian, that they had no choice. And then later on, they got some really good people there now that are much more open-minded. And so there's not as much resistance. So people are freer to ask the questions that need to be asked. And the more you ask, the more needs to be asked. And they found arrowheads in North Carolina that were unlike anything in North America. They were identical to what they call the Solutrians over there in Europe. And now they know positively that there were some Solutrians that had made the trip across the Atlantic, into the East Coast and left those arrowheads in a cave. So, back goes the peopling of the Americas, further back in time, and the questions still remain, and the oddball things keep resurfacing and resurfacing. These huge skulls, giants' bones, even living giants have been recorded. You're familiar with Alabama, the town of Tuscaloosa.
Mm-hmm.
But Tuscaloosa is a Choctaw word. It means black warrior. And Tuscaloosa was recorded by DeSoto as being a giant, using that word. And that Tuscaloosa was so revered that he was never allowed to walk. I mean, anywhere he needed to go, they carried him. So, there's a number of those really large, oversized people scattered about the Americas that on the record.
They're stated in they're in the Bible as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the Bible talking about giants. That's where a lot of people think it's a Sasquatch or something, but they talk about the giants too.
Well, there may be connections, and I'm sure there are.
What's the big secret? What's the big secret? Don't we want to know the truth? And isn't it all about, we don't know those things you all talk about, aliens and this and that are real, because we need evidence. Well, then when they get skulls and different things that are unique and different, they want to hide them. And who is they? Who's behind all this?
Well,
what have you found out?
I don't mean to be mean-mouthed in the Smithsonian, particularly picking on them. But when they were started, they were not a scientific institution. They were a collection agency. They collected artifacts and things. I mean, they were considered to be, quote, America's attic. So they liked to collect, and they were interested in anthropology. And, they hired this guy, Herlishka, and it's more like anthropology gone wild.
Mm-hmm.
He really went wild with it. But there's an Indian or Native American named they called him Ishii, just a one word name. He was the last of his tribe to come out of the woods. No one understood his language. They found him in a slaughterhouse in Oroville, California, trying to get some food. He was naked and emaciated.
Mm.
And in 3 years' time, he had learned the language, was working at the Museum of Anthropology there at the Phoebe Hearst Museum in California. And he was doing well. He had a bank account.
Nice.
He got tuberculosis, and he didn't last long, about 3 or 4 years, and he passed away. And he had told his caretaker, Alfred Kroeber, that his religious beliefs were that all of his body, he didn't want an autopsy done, And so many years later, in the 1990s, this anthropologist named Oren Starn was going through Alfred Kroeber's correspondences with the Smithsonian, and he found where they had packaged up Ishii's brain and sent it to the Smithsonian.
Oh.
And he knew that they weren't supposed to do that, so he turned it over to the Native Americans. And they petitioned the Smithsonian to give it back, and then the Smithsonian denied having it. And then they produced the correspondences, and then they got their brain, and they buried it with his other remains.
Hmm.
But it gives you an idea of what a collector mind will do to keep his collection. And they found it in a vat with 35 other brains. Just
wow. Wow. Isn't that something? Well, there you go. Known for hearing some new stuff along the way, right? MK Davis with us. More to come with him. I'm Connie Willis. You're listening to Coast AM. Like the man said, Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM, and we are getting ready for Halloween. I'll be here Halloween night. Lisa Gar before that, and before that on the Friday, George Norrie, of course, doing Ghost to Ghost. You need to be a part of that, right? You got a story? All right. You got to call in. You got to email. I'm on the site here right now at coasttocoastam.com, and we got our Halloween gallery, you know, that you can be a part of. Oop, it just skipped on me. I think my iPad, it's not liking the touch anymore. What's going on with that? Got a little poltergeist in there. Look in there, tap on it, and see if, hey, maybe you got something really cool you might want to add to the gallery. More info on upcoming Halloween events you can be a part of at coasttocoastam.com. And you've got it on Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis with MK Davis. We're talking about peopling of the Americas, and a couple of questions have come along the way, and we got more people that are calling in to ask some, MK. They were asking about the skull. Do you think it, has anybody figured out anything from it? Do they believe it could have been any type of Native Americans? That was just one of the groups of them. They just happened to be that different, or something else?
Well, it's not likely. The particular things that they see on the skull with the rocker jaw is rather a unique thing to Polynesians. So it's not likely that's going to be an Aboriginal Native American skull, although it was in that cave with other skeletons that were normal Aboriginals sized. The cave, you get a cave that's been there for many, many thousands of years. It goes through intermittent periods of usage, and somebody will use it, then they won't use it, and then someone else will use it, and then they won't use it. And the level of the lake goes up and down, up and down. They describe it as undulating. That the ground itself over time would elevate and would go down, elevate and go down. And so over vast periods of time, you had people living there over what's left of the previous people. And then later on, someone's living over them. And so it's the stratigraphy. They had if you're trying to excavate it, you dig down through, you know, and you find this here, this here, this here. In one of those levels, they found the giants.
Well, we've got a lot of people wanting to talk to you. MK Davis is here on Coast to Coast AM. Ron, first-time caller out of Santa Barbara, California. Beautiful area. Ron, welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you?
I'm doing good. Are you going to turn the speakerphone off?
Okay.
Okay. Hey, there you guys are.
Hi.
I've been trying to call for a long time. I appreciate you taking my call. Anyway, sir, I grew up in California in Santa Barbara and was an abalone diver and urchin diver. And we dove all around the Channel Islands. And there's lots of Indian middens on the Northern Islands where the villages were, and they go take their trash away from there. And you can go through find their arrowheads and whatnot. The next island down from San Miguel is Santa Rosa Island, and it's got a lot of history. And they found pygmy mammoth skulls and bodies and stuff. And the Chumash go way, way back to over 5,000 years. And my buddy was crawling around Santa Rosa because he likes to find stuff. And he found one of those giant skulls.
Oh.
And he said it had two rows of upper teeth and gnarly lower teeth. And it was huge. And he freaked him out. And he stashed it back in there. And he came back, you know, he paddled back to the boat. We were doing abalones or something. And he told the boys about it. And they're like, hey, you know, I don't know. And then he told some, like, you know, the Museum of Natural History around here about it. And they said, hey, we don't want anything to do with it. And, you know, if I were you, I wouldn't talk about it. And then I was, like, kind of pissed off going, whoa, this Bigfoot stuff. And then I, Catalina Island, one of the islands, it's a big island. It's got hotels and whatever on it.
Yeah.
But it, down in the library, they have a library, they have a museum there. And down in the basement in the archives, they have about 15 or 20 of those giant skulls. And the full bodies down in the library, and there's pictures of it you can Google. And then they actually went excavating in certain places and found more bones on the island. But they didn't go to Santa Rosa. They found a lot on Catalina. And they still have those skulls down in there. And I read in the New York or LA Times a little tiny article like, oh, big giant head skulls, you know, where people were talking about it. It's the smallest article you could ever write. And anyways, I Googled it. And the Chumash guys, I know a lot of the elders from the Chumash tribe and stuff because I grew up in Santa Barbara and they kind of grew up here. He said that they were monsters and they'd chase the kids and they'd catch the kids and eat them. And this is 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago. And the Chumash finally got their spears and ganged up and slowly but surely killed those bastards because they were mean monsters and they ate, they tried to get the kids. I guess they love little younger tender ones. And so anyway,
the people eaters,
they killed them off.
Mm. The people eaters.
Well, I mean, you can say a story is just a story, except that, that you have some solid evidence. You know, you have a giant skull, then that makes the story more than just a story.
And if you got 15 and the bodies, he was saying 15 and the bodies.
Right, right. And it's difficult to just come out with that kind of evidence and it not disappear. You know, if you call the standard, you know, what you would think in your mind would be the people to call, they would be definitely interested. Things just disappear. They just vanish. And they say, well, we never got anything like that. Like the Humboldt Museum, that they deny ever having that giant skull, but there's your picture of it. That's taken down in their basement. So what is the problem? And I think you asked that question a while ago, Connie. What is the problem that people have with their own history? You know, do they know something that we don't know? Is there a valid reason why that should be kept? You know, I think that we could handle it, whatever it is. If it's the truth, who wants anything other than that?
What are your, and by the way, thanks, Ron, for that call. That was great. He described that skull just like you did with the teeth up top and then the gnarly at the bottom. You better check into that on Catalina. You got to do that, you know?
Yeah, you got to go out there and put the boots on the ground.
That's, you got to. So what are, well, let me get some more calls before I ask you that question, because that's kind of a closing one. Time flies when you're here. East of the Rockies, Charles out of Corpus Christi, Texas. Hey there, Charles, you got a question for MK?
Hello, Mr. Davis. I was wondering if you've ever heard of a large skull, oversized skull found in an Indian mound in Victoria, Texas.
I think that I have. I've got some information on that. I think that's one that has disappeared too. Am I correct?
If Texas and Austin, then yeah, it did supposedly disappear.
It was supposed to be one of the largest ever found. It's like double the size of anything, you know, normal adult. Just a huge and after just a little brief, you know, study of very, very little time, it disappeared. One of those things where, you know, it's sent somewhere and they swear they didn't get it and it's lost in the ether.
I hear that about people that have made some spacecrafts as well, and that have come up with cures for arthritis and stuff along the way, where they've been thrown up against the wall and guns have been put to their heads, and then they're never supposed to speak of it, and then their stuff is taken away. You know, I hear this all the time. This kind of stuff happens. Who is it that is trying to control all this? Let's go to wild card line number one, John out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome
Hi,
to
Connie.
Coast to Coast.
Hi,
hey WK. There.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question for WK, actually two. First off, with the giant skulls, any relationship to the Nephilim? And second, the Star Child skull. if he's familiar with these, the Star Child skull was supposedly facially reconstructed, and they determined that it was a hybrid found in caves in New Mexico quite some time ago.
Lloyd Pye, I believe, was the caretaker of that skull, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. I am familiar with it. It's a really oddball thing. It's not necessarily large, but it's just oddly constructed with the orbits of the eyes, very shallow eye sockets. You know, some of it's missing. So that kind of complicates the study. I think Lloyd was trying to get some DNA studies done on it, and you know, that's expensive stuff, and you have to raise funds to do it. He got some done, but he was kind of not completed as far as, you know, that you can go into some of the really detailed DNA studies and tell an awful lot about something. But before that could be done, Lloyd got sick and passed away, and so I think that it is I got no doubt that it's real. I don't think that it's plastic. I think that they were exploring the fact whether this thing was earthly or whether it was extraterrestrial, and I don't think they proved positively it was extraterrestrial, but they it kind of looks like it might have been going that way, and maybe somebody else can pick up where he left off and get that question answered.
Well, they did pick up after that, and then I was kind of hugely involved in that at one point. He was a friend of mine. He stayed at my house for a while, and so did that skull. And there's a whole lot to that that I was a part of for a while. And
you
then
a bit about it.
Yeah. And then it kind of did a little twisting and turning, and then he had passed away, and then some other people took it over, and then Melanie, the owner, you know, took control of it, and they came up with a pretty quick answer at one point after all those years of working with it and trying to do something with it. And you can hear it on Coast to Coast. I had her on, and she gave a real quick answer for it one time. So you guys can go back into the archives of Coast to Coast, and you can get the answer of what they came about to have at the end. So that's a whole nother show for sure, but you can find it in our archives. So I only say that because the time is at the end. We're closing out. MK, thank you for being with us. Is there anything before we head out that you want to say in conclusion to the peopling?
Well, I mean, I could go on for days.
I know.
as an addendum to the Smithsonian thing, that mm-hmm. the Smithsonian, Orrin Starn found out that the Smithsonian had in their basement 18,000 Native American skeletons and were not obligated to return any of them. They were immune to that, to the Repatriation Act. So what did they plan to do with them? Who knows? I don't know. No one knows.
Well, are we related to the giants?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I know. And that's another show.
We'll keep plugging away at it. We're going to try to find out.
I know. We're working it. Okay. MK, thank you so much. Where can people find you? TheDavisReport.wordpress.com.
Exactly. Then you'll find that I populated quite a few of these skull pictures and giant pictures and all kinds of stuff there just for perusal. And hopefully you can go and look and enjoy and remember what we talked about.
Thank you very much, MK Davis. Before that, it was Brad Yates tapping away. I'm Connie Willis. Thank you for joining us. Hope you like the guest. Let us know if you did, because we love to hear the good news from you for sure. I'll be back on Halloween. I don't know. You guys have a guess on who you want to be there. Let me know. I'd love to hear what you're thinking. So I appreciate all of you guys being here and supporting me as well for 7 years on Coast. Yay, I'm excited myself. So thanks again for all the guests, and from the foothills of the Colorado Rockies, I want to say many thanks to the people that put this together that I have known for 7 years. That's Julie Talbot and Bill May, Lisa Lyon, Tommy Danheiser, Dan Galani, Stephanie Smith, Mike Cosio, Lex Lonehood, Sean LeDesseur, Tim Banal, Gina Salvati, Donna Walker, thank you as well. Greg Foster, Ryan Stacy, Chris Burrows, Ian Punnett, Lisa Garr, Richard Sirrett, George Knapp, the entire Coast to Coast AM team, and even the man, George Norrie himself. Thank you all for being here. And until we meet again, join me on ConnieWillis.com and keep watching the night skies and continue with me to seek out the strange and uncover the unknown. For Coast to Coast AM, I'm Connie Willis.